The following is a class on the Srimad Bhagavatam. 5th Canto, Chapter Number 13, Text Number 10. Given by His Grace, Sriman Sankarshan Dasadhikari. Recorded on October 21st, 2012, in Copenhagen, Denmark.
Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Karhi smachit chudra rasan vichinvan tat makshikabi vyatita vimana tatra ati krishchat pratilabdamana Balat Vilumpanti Atta Tam Tata Anye Karhi Smachit Chudra San Vachin Vansh Tan Makshika Bir Vyadito Vimana Tatati krishchat prati labdhamano Balad vilumpat yatatang tatonye Karhi smachit chudarasan vachinvansh Tanmakshika bir vyatito vimana Tatrati krishchat prati labdhamano Balad vilumpant yatatang tatonye Karhi smachit Sometimes Chudra Very insignificant Rasan Sexual enjoyment Vichinvan Searching for Tat Of those women Amakshikabi By honeybees Or the husbands Or family members Vyatita Very much aggrieved Vimana Insulted Tatra In that Ati Very much Krichchat With difficulty Because of spending money Prapti labdhamana Obtaining sexual enjoyment Balat By force Vilumpanti Kidnapped Atta Thereafter Tam The object of sense enjoyment The woman Tata From him Anye Another debauchee. Translation in purport by Srila Prabhupada. Sometimes, in order to have a little insignificant sex enjoyment, one searches after a debauched woman. In this attempt, one is insulted and is chastised by the woman's kinsmen. This is like going to take honey from a beehive and being attacked by the bees. Sometimes after spending lots of money, one may acquire another woman for some extra sense enjoyment. Unfortunately, the objects of sense enjoyment, the woman, is taken away or kidnapped by another debauchee. Purport. In a great forest, honeycombs are very important. People often go there to collect honey from the combs, and sometimes the bees attack and punish them. In human society, those who are not Krishna conscious remain in the forest of material life simply for the honey of sex life. Such debauchees are not at all satisfied with one wife. They want many women. Day after day, with great difficulty, they try to secure such women, and sometimes while trying to taste this kind of honey, one is attacked by a woman's kinsman and chastised very heavily. By bribing others, one may secure another woman for enjoyment. Yet another debauchee may kidnap her or offer her something better. This woman hunting is going on in the forest of the material world, sometimes legally and sometimes illegally. Consequently, in this Krishna consciousness movement, the devotees are forbidden to have illicit sex. Thus, they avoid so many difficulties. One should remain satisfied with one woman, being duly married. One can satisfy one's lusty desires with his wife without creating disturbance in society and being punished for doing so. Vandeham Shri Guru Shri Jata Parakamalam Shri Gurun Vaishnavamscha Shri Rupam Sagrajatam Sahagana Raganitam Vitam Tam Sajivam Sadaitam Savadudam Varejana Sahitam Krishna Chaitanya Devam Shri Radha Krishna Padam Sahagana Lalita Shivishakan Vitamscha Nama Om Vishnu Padaya Krishna Prestaya Bhutale Shrimate Bhakti Vedanta Swaminiti Namine Namaste Sarasvate Deve Gauravani Pracharine Nirvishesha Shunyavadi Paschatya Deshatarine. So it is stated very nicely in the Srimad Bhagavatam. Yan Maitinadi Griyamedi Sukham Mitucham. That happiness which is considered adi, maitun is adi, sexual intercourse is number one pleasure in this material world. For who? Grihamedi, you see. The envious materialistic people. But for the transcendentalist, hitucham, it is insignificant. So how can one possibly, coming out of the society in which everyone is addicted by sex pleasure, how is it possible to come to a platform where you can feel that it's insignificant? I mean, how can you possibly make that transition? We live in a completely sexually surcharged society, as confirmed by Sigmund Freud. Prabhupada said he was right regarding the material world. It does revolve completely around sex, that's a thing. So how does one, when you're living in a sexually charged atmosphere, which is, I mean, as soon as you walk out on the street, I mean, everywhere you go, this place is sexually surcharged. And see, the way everybody's dressing, the way they talk, the posters, the billboards, the toothpaste advertisements, I mean, everything is sex. What was that ad? Let's see. I remember that ad when I was a kid. New Ultrabite toothpaste gives your mouth sex appeal. And then in my generation, we grew up with the Beatles, you know. I want to hold your hand. Since I saw her standing there, my heart went boom when I was standing in the room. You know, all this garbage, you know. completely programmed. Even if you aren't inclined, I mean, as I remember in high school, I wasn't inclined to date girls, but I was this, all this pressure, you know. So all this pressure. I remember we had in the U.S., you have six, in high school and junior high, you have six classes a day, and you have what's called homeroom, where you meet every day, they take the attendance, we would say the Lord's Prayer, we'd take attendance, then we'd go to our six classes after that. It was called homeroom. It lasted about 10 or 15 minutes every morning where you start your day. So in all the way from the sixth grade to the 12th grade, it was all alphabetical order. So I was Stephen Bridge, and I was sitting between two girls, Sherry Breakiron and Patsy Brill. And they were girlfriends. They were always talking back and forth, and I was sitting in the middle. For 6 years, I had to sit in the middle of their conversations, you see, every morning. By the time it reached the senior year, the big thing for the seniors was the senior prom. You know, you invite some girl, you know, to come to the senior prom. You get your you rent your tuxedo, you know. She gets one of these fancy gowns, you know, and you buy her a corsage, a fancy flower thing to put on her thing. Everybody gets their date to go to the senior prom, and every girl, you know, she has to have her date, otherwise she's just nothing. So I had no interest in such an affair, you know. Senior prom, you know, who cares about such a thing? But Patsy and Sherry had one girlfriend who didn't have a date yet. I was bombarded by these girls, you know, you have to take her to the prom, you know. So this way we're pressured, you see, we're just pressured. And one of my male friends, Bill Abbey, he used to call me, I wasn't dating girls, he used to call me Chicken Finsterwald. It was a nickname, you know, for being a coward, because I wasn't dating girls, you know. So it was all this pressure, you know. The girls were pressuring me, the boys were pressuring me. You got to get into this male-female thing. You just got into it, otherwise you're nowhere, you know. If you're not into the male-female thing, you're nowhere. Where's the training for Brahmacharya Ashram, you know? Where is the training? There's no training for Brahmacharya Ashram in this culture, you see. To see every woman as mother, you see, Mataji, you see. Prabhupada taught us that. I don't know, sometimes some devotees now, they want to change it in ISKCON. Oh, the women should not be Mataji anymore. They're actually trying to change it in ISKCON. But what can I say? Prabhupada personally ordered me in a letter. I have the letter to prove it. He said, address every woman as mother. Prabhupada's personal order to me. So I don't care what they say. Prabhupada ordered me. Every woman is my mother, except for my wife, you see. This is the Prabhupada thing. If I stop seeing woman as mother, what is the danger in ISKCON? We will start seeing them as such objects, you see. That's the danger. If we throw away seeing women as mother to modernize and, you know, pacify the feminists or whatever rationale may be there, then we run the risk of going back to seeing women as sex objects in due course, you see. Because mother means, I wouldn't dream of having sex with you, you're my mother, you see. That's mother. I wouldn't dream of having sex with her, you're my mother. Of course, Hazrat Muhammad, his father was so low class, he had to say, don't have sex with your mother. That's how degraded the persons who became the first Muslims were. Don't have sex with your mother. You won't find any injunction in the Bhagavad Gita. Don't have sex with your mother, you see. Or even in the Bible, you won't find such a thing, you see. So the woman, she is seen as mother, you see. She is my Mataji. And that is respectful. Just like my father is my Prabhu, my master. My mother is also my Prabhu. She is my master, you see. And Prabhupada said the women, they should see the men as sons. You know, treat them as son. In this way, mother and son is a very nice relationship. Formal, but pure, you see, mother and son. So instead of being carried away by all of this, you know, this lusty propaganda, we should just develop a cool brain, you know, by following the wonderful pathway, the bhakti marg, you see. Become cool-brained Bhakti Marn means cool brain, you see. Not agitated brain. So if your mind is agitated, what do you do to cool off? You just got to go in the cooler. If you're all hot, you just got to go in the cooler and get cool off, you see. And that my cooler is Harinama, Harinama, Harinami Bhakevalam. That'll cool you off, you see. Why? Why will it cool you off? Because Krishna is the source of all pleasure, you see. All pleasure actually coming from Krishna. This sexual pleasure is simply perversion of real pleasure, perverted reflection of actual pleasure, you see. Why would you take the perverted reflection of a thing when you can get the real thing, you see? This is intelligence. Why take, if I hold a cashier's check for $1 billion up in the air and say, here, this is for you. And you see the reflection in the water and you dive into the water to take the reflection of the cashier's check. What kind of idiot are we, you see? We want to take the reflection of the thing. The reflection is backwards. It's not even, it inverts it, it perverts it when it's reflected. And you see, it's not the original form, it's now a perverted or inverted form of the original object. So why take a perverted or inverted form of rasa or pleasure when you can get the real original form? This is intelligent, you see. Take the original $1 billion cashier's check. Why dive at the reflection of it in the water? You see, this is called Krishna consciousness, to go for the original $1 billion cashier's check. Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Ram, Ram Ram, Hare. It's all there. Everything is there in that Maha Mantra. The whole spiritual world is there. All the pastimes of Krishna, all the forms, all the qualities, the entourage, the paraphernalia, the dham, everything about Krishna that you could ever experience or ever relish and have in all of eternity is already right there at your tongue tip. Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Ram, Ram Ram, Hare Hare. So, Prabhus and Madhajis, all we really have to do is have faith in the name. It's all we really have to do. It's all we have to do. If we simply can have faith in the name, then we can easily cross over this ocean of material suffering. You understand? All we need is that faith in the name. Samashrutaye palapallava plavam mahatpatang punya jashava marare bhavam badir vatsa parang param padam 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 yadra padam nite sham. Wow, now that's poetry. Shakespeare can't compete with that. So nice Sanskrit poetry. Srila Vyasadeva. Translation is, for one who has taken shelter of the boat, of the lotus feet of Lord Sri Krishna, this vast, insurmountable ocean of material existence becomes reduced down to the amount of water contained within the footprint of a calf. You see. For such persons, their aim is that Parampadam, that Vaikuntha world, not that place like Copenhagen or New York, which is padam padam yadva padam natesham, where there is danger at every step, you see. So, how do you get to those lotus feet? The lotus feet are fully, completely, totally manifest in the form of the Hare Krishna Maha Mantra. You don't have to go very far for those lotus feet. You just have to chant Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Ram, Ram Ram, Hare Hare. take the dust of the feet on your head. It's right there in the form of Hare Krishna Maha Mantra. You see. Therefore, Bhaktivinoda, he is urging, Grihe tako vane tako sadahadi bole tako sukke duke bulo varane harinam kurude. He's urging, you see. Whether you're a householder, whether you're a sannyasi, it does not matter. You always chant Hare Krishna mantra, you see. If you're happy, chant Hare Krishna. If you're miserable, chant Hare Krishna. In every condition, simply go on chanting Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare. Hare Ram, Hare Ram, 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 Hare. Well, I got my rounds finished. Don't worry about him. I chanted Hare. I finished my chanting for the day, so now I can just... Actually, Prabhupada, I think he was being sarcastically making fun of this. Shrutakirti was told one story that Prabhupada, he had his beads, you know, finally the 16th round in the count of beads. He said, I finished my rounds, now I can do any damn thing I want. I think Prabhupada was making fun of us. He was being sarcastically making fun of his disciples, you see, because that's our mood. At least I have that problem, you know. Got my rounds done. I can do whatever I want. Sleep, eat, space out. It's okay. I got my rounds done, you know. But Prabhupada gave a wonderful, wonderful instruction in one letter to some Japanese persons. They weren't in the temple. They'd read Prabhupada's books. I told the other day, but some of you are here for the first time. I'll tell again. They had read Prabhupada's books, and they really liked chanting Hare Krishna. So Prabhupada advised them that you should always chant. He said, when you're taking your bath, chant Hare Krishna. When you're doing something with your hands, chant Hare Krishna. When you're on the bus, chant Hare Krishna. When you're taking rest, chant Hare Krishna. In this way, Prabhupada advised him to go on. What is the harm if you go on 24 hours a day always chanting Hare Krishna? And I was thinking, wow, that's got to be... I was in Vrindavan, actually, when I found that letter in the Veda base. You know how Vrindavan can kind of uplift you spiritually. So I was... My mind kind of revolted against it. Oh, no. Don't do that. The mind was objecting. I was saying, let me just try this, you know. Keep chanting when I'm pouring the bucket of water over my, you know, pulling the water over my head, Hare Krishna, when I'm doing this. The mind is saying, no, you can't do that. You don't want to chant too much now. The mind was trying to tell me, no. I said, you shut up, mind. I'm gonna try this, give this a try. I'm going to try chanting as much as I can throughout the day. And it's really amazing. Just try chanting when you didn't chant before, you know. When you're shaving, you know, or combing your hair, Hare Krishna. Just try doing what you haven't done before. Putting some extra mantras into your day. And you know what happens? The more you put those mantras in, the more they become delicious and tasty. And actually, that's our goal. We want to get to the point where we actually have taste for the name, where it's not just some mechanical thing I have to do because Prabhupada said I got to chant 16 rounds. And I promised my Guru Maharaj I'm going to chant 16 rounds, you see. That's okay in the beginning, but we have to go beyond that stage where we actually get taste, you see. And I was thinking, well, here I'm chanting all these years, no taste, but wow, this is a little tidbit of... really fantastic insider information from Srila Prabhupada himself. And I found that by doing this, that actually the name, just doing it a little bit here and there, you know, wherever you can think about it. Oh, I am spacing out, or I'm thinking of some old memory from the old, just chant Hare Krishna instead. Instead of letting your mind space out on some mundane thought, just put the Hare Krishna mantra in there, and the more you do it, wow, it just becomes amazing. The name just becomes, you start looking for every available opportunity where you can just get back to the chanting. Just like Prabhupada gives the example of how a boy is attracted to a girl spontaneously in the Bhagavad Gita purport. So we can actually get to that point where we're just like, you know, like a boy just really anxious to get back with his girlfriend again, or a girl just anxious to get back with their boyfriend again, just anxious to get back to that Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Ram, Hare Ram, Ram Ram, Hare Hare, you see. Bhaktivinoda Thakur, he's praying for that day when he can actually get Namrutshi. Of course, he already has it, but he's showing example for us, you see. Because the fact is, we're attached to, as this purport confirms, we're attached to sex pleasure, either subtle or gross. Thinking about it, you know, we're still addicted to this thing. That's our fact in this material world. We're very attacked. That's why we have to physically separate ourselves, men and women. We have women here, the men here, because we know we have this disease, you see, of lust. So to protect ourselves, we keep we follow the Vedic system, some separation between men and women, physically. Of course, spiritually, we're all together. But physically, we make some separation for the benefit of the men and the women both, you see. So, this process, Bhaktivinoda Thakur, is very, very nicely sung. Kabe habe bolo se dinamar. When, oh, when will that day be mine? Aparada guchi, shudaname ruchi, kripa bole habe hridoye sanchar. When my offenses ceasing, taste for the name increasing, when in my heart will your mercy shine? Kabe habe bolo se dinamar. When, oh, when will that day be mine? So this is the mood, you see. It's hankering for that day when I can really, really relish the name. Right now it's mechanical. We're still trying to train ourselves. And that's okay. But just be determined and be dedicated to the training, you see. And in due course, by the mercy of Guru and Krishna, that day will come when we actually develop taste for the name. That day will come when we can utter Krishna's name and taste unlimited ecstasy just by two syllables, Krishna. So anyway, I can ask now if there's some questions. Yes, Prabhu.
Well, it can seem like if we are constantly chanting, when we, for instance, are cooking, then the mind will maybe be diverted. Either there's two things happening. Either the mind is diverting from what you're really doing, the cooking, and you're spacing out the cooking. Or you're spacing out the chanting. And that means you're sort of like getting into the habit of not hearing the chanting. So that, it seems there can be a danger in this.
Mm. Oh, chanting Hare Krishna is dangerous. Warning. The Surgeon General advises that chanting Hare Krishna would be dangerous for your spiritual life. Now, there is a practical side. I mean, you have to be careful if you're chanting over while you're cooking, because you might get saliva in the prasadam and then you can't offer it to Krishna. You know, there's sort of practical things, you know. No, if you have, there's some very intensive service, so you have to really focus your full attention on that thing to do it properly. That's as good as chanting. That is chanting Hare Krishna. That is. It's non-different. But I find a lot of things we do are just, they don't require that much complete, total, you know, laser focus. And you're cutting vegetables. You know, you spend 3 hours cutting vegetables, and you're not allowed to say Hare Krishna once because you have to focus on, you know, let's be realistic. It depends on the situation. I dare not chant Hare Krishna while I'm shaving because I might cut myself. You know, you can find all kind of ways to rationalize not chanting Hare Krishna. I'm riding on the bus, and if I chant Hare Krishna, then people may think I'm weird. That crazy man over there muttering, you know, Hare Krishna. I think he's weird. I don't want to chant Hare Krishna on the bus because I think I'm insane. You know, you can find so many excuses not to chant Hare Krishna. Maya will give you unlimited excuses not to chant Hare Krishna if you want not to chant Hare Krishna. Of course, not in every situation should you chant Hare Krishna. We had one boy who would sleep during the japa period, and he would come to Bhagavatam class and sit there and chant his rounds during the class. I mean, which is a completely bogus thing, you know. So that's why we have senior devotees to tell us if we're doing something fanatical or, you know, it's not really proper. So I trust your judgment as the temple president to guide the devotees if they're taking Prabhupada's advice fanatically, in other words, interrupting their service. I fully trust your Prabhupada's empowered representative, the empowered representative, your Guru Maharaj. So I fully trust you that you'll guide the devotees properly if they're fanatically chanting Hare Krishna in such a way that their service is not being done properly. But I would say generally, you know, somebody is cutting vegetables and they're thinking about some mundane song they used to really like, you know, while they're cutting the vegetables. You know, that for their favorite punk rock band, you know, they're cutting the vegetables, their mind is just totally absorbed in that. So better they chant Hare Krishna and cut the vegetables, think about their favorite punk rock band, you know what I'm saying? Any other questions? Yeah.
It's a bit of the same question, but which is better? Chanting Hare Krishna without being attentive or not chanting Hare Krishna?
The thing is, your 16 rounds have to be completely laser focused, you see. No other consciousness. That's why we advise, you know, don't drive. Some people, you know, they drive their car, but drive to work chanting the rounds. I mean, it's not proper. So you can't concentrate fully. If you do, you're not a safe driver. So your 16 rounds have to be with no other thing. But other things, Prabhupada said, but he note the letter. He said, while doing something with your hands, you can chant Hare Krishna. So it's not considered offensive if you put Hare Krishna mantra in the background throughout the whole day while you're doing things. It's not considered offensive. Your 16 rounds have to be undivided attention. But other times you can chant Hare, you can be focused on shaving and also put a little Hare Krishna in the background. Now, some devotees may be disturbed. You know, you're trying to take rest and you're sitting there chanting Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna. So we have to be, you have to see time, place, and circumstance. Prabhupada did not like devotees chanting japa outside the door of his quarters, although he liked kirtan. So we shouldn't impose it on other people if it's bothering them. You know, Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna. We have to be, we're a family. We have to be conscious of others. But there's definitely many opportunities. Just like walking down the street, you can chant Hare Krishna, with or without beads. Why not add more Hare Krishna to your day? The extra chanting can be halfway focused. That's not offensive. Because it's extras. Okay? Yes?
We see that in the past we joined and then we, more or less, we went out on the street very fast, book distribution, Harinam book distribution. Nowadays, it seems to me that there are a lot of more focus on the education and chanting and then Prabhupada gave this instruction to these Japanese that they could chant the whole day.
What's the power balance?
Yeah.
Okay. In the beginning, there's this huge thing: save the world, spread the movement, flood the planet with the Prabhupada's books. Those things are still there; they haven't changed. Actually, I remember when I in the spring of 72, I remember when Prabhupada sent the letter out. A letter came from Prabhupada because our movement was growing like anything in the U.S. I mean, devotees were joining every day. We had devotees joining the temple every day. You know, every day, new people would move in, shave up. It was like explosive growth. But people didn't know the philosophy very well. Their sadhana wasn't that good. And Prabhupada then wrote a letter. He says, if you keep adding, you're boiling the milk. You see, you're trying to get some burfi, right? You're boiling down the pot of milk to get some burfi. You keep adding milk, you'll never get the burfi. He said, better to boil the milk until it becomes thick and sweet. And that's when he introduced the standard Srimad Bhagavatam class where we chant the Sanskrit. That wasn't done in the early days. No one chanted Sanskrit. Only Prabhupada chanted Sanskrit in the early days. And we started chanting Sanskrit verses. We became more brahminical. That was on Prabhupada's order, that along with the rapid expansion, the revolutionary zeal, which was Prabhupada fanned the fire of that revolutionary zeal, but then he said, it's more important to maintain the devotees we have than to make new devotees. So, you know, if you keep making devotees, but nobody's trained how to chant properly, nobody's trained to understand the philosophy properly, then what are you doing? You're bringing people in like crazy, they're leaving like crazy also, you see? And we have, how many people have you seen leave this movement? You've been around for many years. You've seen many people leave, haven't you? Isn't it? We've all, anyone who's been around for a long time, been around for 41 years. Mani Dharpa, we've been around for many years. We've seen him come and go. It's like a bus station, this movement sometimes. Sometimes, you know.
Bus station movement.
So yeah, it's like that sometimes. They come and they go. So we got him here at the bus station, you know. We don't just come in and go. Now that we got him here, we got to train him up. How to take shelter of the name. You see, what's the good of, you know, massive preaching if the people who come aren't trained where they can devote their whole life to this process? What's the use of it? The people that are here, we should train them very nicely. So both things should go on simultaneously, you see. Prabhupada said the most important thing is to save the world. And even more important is to save yourself. So one of my disciples in Lithuania said, well, Guru Maharaj, then, you know, how do we balance that? How do we do that? I said, well, the morning program is save yourself, and after breakfast is save the world. That's how you balance it. The morning program, getting up, Mangal Arati, Tulsi Worship, Bhagavatam, Elit, Japa. That's save yourself, and after breakfast go out and save the world. You see, that's the balance. Yeah.
You mentioned that one should have faith in the holy name. So can my faith in the holy name or my prayer to the holy name change other person?
Can your faith in the holy name affect others? That's the question.
Yeah, or can it transform their heart?
Yeah, same thing. Infecting and transforming a heart, the same thing. Okay. The question is wonderfully answered by His Divine Grace Srila Prabhupada in his purport to the Chaitanya Charitamrita. And this is one of the most amazing things I've ever heard come out of Prabhupada's mouth. It's so amazing you could hardly believe it, but you have to believe it because Prabhupada said it. He said that if one will have complete faith in the holy names of the Lord, in other words, the way he phrased it was one become completely offenseless in his chanting, which is this means your faith, which is similar to your point of faith. If one becomes completely offenseless in his chanting of the holy names of the Lord, completely 100% pure in his chanting, that means absolute faith. It's the same thing. He says, if one becomes completely pure in his chanting of the holy names, then he becomes Jagat Guru. And under his influence, the whole world will take up Krishna consciousness. So that's got to be a really amazing instruction, you see. So each one of us should try to become pure chanters of the names. Each one of us should try to become. And it's also... it's graded on a percentage basis. In other words, to whatever percentage or whatever amount of faith and purity you have in your chanting, to that extent you'll be potent for influencing others to become Krishna conscious. So they actually tie in saving yourself and saving the world. They appear to be different, but actually they're the same. Because the more that you become absorbed in bhakti, you automatically have potency for inspiring others. You see, the one who is completely, totally absorbed in pure bhakti, that one devotee can deliver the whole universe, Prabhupada said. The whole universe he can deliver. So each one of us should try to become such a pure devotee who could do the greatest good for all living entities just simply by their presence in this universe. We have to honestly So how do we get there? Well, the first thing is we have to see how, we have to honestly see how bad our present position is. And we have to honestly hear feedback from others who can oftentimes see our faults better than we can. We have to really, really be open to our faults being known and understood. We should not just think we're advanced devotees. We should think we're very, very... The fact is, we're not that advanced. We should feel... We should honestly see how fallen and how lusty, how lazy, how greedy. We should see our bad qualities. We should become very, very expert at finding the faults in ourselves. And we should take help from others, you see. When others point out our faults, we shouldn't just argue. We should all be submissive. Well, he's pointing out a fault. Let me understand how he sees me, you see. Maybe I can learn something from this. This devotee sees a fault in me. I didn't think I had such a fault, but let me open myself up and see, what is this fault devotee sees in me? So the more we can actually see our faults, honestly see and admit our faults, then we're in a position to actually do something to conquer them. If we blindly think we are faultless, then we'll never remain, never get past the neophyte stage. Never get past the neophyte stage. But one who is willing to take correction, you see. And even Prabhupada said, the one who is more chastised, he is advanced. So devotee is actually very eager to take correction. I remember one devotee in Mumbai, he gave Bhagavatam class. He said, if some devotee finds fault with you, invite him to move in with you. You see. Invite him to be your roommate. So it's actually very good if others are pointing out our faults, you see. We should be very eager to find out our own faults, because that's how we can become strong in bhakti. That's how we can develop strong faith in the name. By coming free from the, and especially those 10 namaparads, everything is right there. This is why Prabhupada said for initiation ceremony, the 10 offenses must be lectured on in the initiation ceremony. Because becoming Krishna conscious doesn't just mean following the four regulative principles and chanting at least 16 rounds. It means learning how to avoid the 10 namaparads. You see, if we can conquer over those 10 namaparads, then that means we're becoming very, very strong in our faith in the name. And we become empowered Vaishnavas who can deliver the whole world. If we can become free of all those aparads. So that's wanted. Does that answer your question? Anything else? Yeah.
So, it's very good when others see fault in you. But in order for there to be someone to see that fault, then someone has to first find it. So should we find faults?
Should devotees be fault finders for the benefit of others? Well, one has to be careful. As long as... the person who is actually a genuine well-wisher of others, he's qualified to find faults. A person who has genuine, if I genuinely love you, I'll just make any, you know, direct example. If I genuinely love you, I have sincere compassion for you. If I'm your well-wisher in every circumstance, like Prabhupada said, you're ever well-wisher, you see. If I am your true well-wishing friend, I always want the best for you in every single situation. I'm always thinking, what's for your benefit, then I'm qualified to find fault with you, you see. But if I don't have that mood, then I'm not qualified to find fault with you. So we need to hear from those devotees who are our genuine well-wishers. They are qualified to point out our faults. Others, it could just be their envy. But even still, if others do point out, even someone who's not really qualified, they point out a fault, still we should consider it. That Prabhupada had that experience in India. He was distributing Bhakti Godhead magazine. And one man found fault with what he was doing. He said, you should publish books. The magazine they can throw away, but you should publish books. They will keep the book. He pointed out a discrepancy in Prabhupada's preaching strategy. You know, some ordinary Hindu gentleman. And Prabhupada, he said, yes, that was very good advice. So Prabhupada was not against taking advice even from non-devotee. Even in New York, he took advice from a Jewish physician. Prabhupada had a stroke. He was lying there in the devotees were called a physician. It was very difficult. They couldn't find any doctors. It was like Labor Day weekend. It's a holiday weekend. But they finally found a doctor. He came to 26 Second Avenue. And he was telling, in the other room, he told the devotees, he should take a walk. He needs to take a daily walk, a morning walk. Because Baba wasn't taking morning walks at those times, you see. But then he was in the other room, he heard. The doctor was saying, I should take a morning walk. So that he actually, after that, Prabhupada instituted the morning walk after hearing from that Jewish doctor. You know, so he needs to be more active. You know, he's not active enough. He found fault with Prabhupada's daily regimen, that he wasn't taking a walk, you see. So Prabhupada could take advice from anyone, even a Jewish meat-eating doctor, you see, or a pious Hindu gentleman. He could take advice from anyone. He was completely open. Because Krishna can communicate in any way through any channel. Krishna is not limited, he's unlimited. You see. Krishna can communicate in unlimited ways. So one has a sincere devotee is always trying to understand, Krishna, what do you want me to do? Krishna, what do you want me to do? Please reveal it to me. That's his mood at every minute. Krishna, I'm just your puppet. Please reveal to me what you want me to do. He's always in that mood. And he can, Krishna gives him the intelligence to understand what he's supposed to do. Does that help a little bit?
Yeah.
Or does the question still remain?
Oh, I have actually forgotten the question now. Oh, yes.
If you're in the mood of friendly mood of helping your fellow devotees, then you can point out their faults. Prabhu, I think you're eating too much. But I've seen, don't get fanatical about it. I mean, I never forget this example. Here I was a brahmachari, you know, at a Ratha Yatra festival, and and I had a Simply Wonderful in my hand, getting ready to enjoy that Simply Wonderful, those wonderful Simply Wonderfuls. And some brahmachari comes up to me and he says, stop! That's a dhoti whitener. In other words, if you take that Simply Wonderful, you know, brahmacharis don't eat sweets. If you eat that sweet, you're going to fall down and in into grihastha ashram. So did I eat the sweet? He was really, you know, you can be a fanatical fault finder like that, you know, just complete fanaticism, those kind of things. Well, guess who entered grihastha ashram shortly after them? He did. And for me, I went on a strong brahmachari for 14 years. If devotees are fanatical, you know, you have to know what Prabhupada wants. You have senior devotees like your temple president, your Chaitanya Chandrapu, advanced devotees like Manidhar Prabhu, senior Prabhupada disciple. You should, you know, from such devotees, you can get a proper understanding of what's to be done and what's not to be done. Some neophyte devotees may fanatically criticize you for different things. When in doubt, you can check with your seniors. You see.
The question is this. To correct somebody, do we have to go around looking for faults in the devotees? We are not supposed to.
Can you repeat that for me?
We are not supposed to look faults in the devotees. So to correct them, should we go around looking for the faults in them?
Okay. So on the one hand, it said you're not supposed to find fault with devotees. But on the one hand, you're supposed to always help the devotees to be Krishna conscious. So in one sense, one is supposed to, especially seniors, is supposed to look for the faults. And a spiritual master has to watch his disciples like a hawk and see if they make some mistakes so he can correct them. It's his duty. If the spiritual master or the father do not correct their dependent for their mistakes, they are considered the enemy of their child or their disciple. So senior devotees actually have a duty. It's not like a sense gratification, holier-than-thou thing, that, ha, 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 I pointed out your fault. Not at all. If they're that mood, they're not qualified. There's the duty of the senior devotees to point out the discrepancies of the young devotees. That's called training. That's not wrong. It's a duty. But if it's done in a holier-than-thou attitude, that is wrong. If it's done as a genuine well-wisher, then that is proper. So an older devotee, of course, Papa didn't jump on us on every little thing. He said, I am 10% strict and 90% lenient. Devotees could do something wrong and probably wouldn't say anything. The next day they do it again, he rebuked them mildly. They do it again the third day, you get a little heavier. The fourth day, he'd really blast them, you see. So the idea is to be very tolerant, but sometimes one has to instruct for the sake of the person. That's the idea. Be very tolerant, but if there's need to train the person, for out of compassion, one has to instruct them.
Instructing is one thing, but on this other side, you go large, details, little, fault finding, you did this, you did this.
Nitpicking. Now, a devotee is not a nitpicker. Prabhupada explains that there are two types of little creatures, the bee and the honeybee and the fly. The honeybee is very much attracted to the beautiful flowers. He gets a little nectar from the flowers, you see. And then the fly is looking for sores. So, Prabhupada explains in this connection that every living being, he has a combination of good and bad qualities. So the devotee, he looks for the good. He's the honeybee, and the non-devotee, he is the fly looking for the discrepancy. So a devotee should look for the good. That's a devotee. And if he sees something bad there, as he's looking, seeing the good in that person, then he can point that out. He should be a virtue finder, not a fault finder. Devotee means he is a virtue finder. But when he's looking in your heart and he's seeing your virtues and he notices something that's impeding your virtues, he may point that out. But he's a virtue finder, not a fault finder. That's devotee. I remember Tamal Krishnamaraj, he gave a nice example. He said, the spiritual master, talking especially about Prabhupada, Srila Prabhupada could see the spark of devotion in the heart of a very covered over materialistically minded person. He could fan that spark into a blazing fire. So that's the mood of the preacher, you see. He wants to see the good in that person. He wants to connect with the good in that person and then encourage that good to become better and better and better, which then will burn away all the bad qualities. So this is a very, you know, this whole thing of counseling and fault finding, it's a very complex psychological issue. But it all boils down to sincerity. Tesham satata yuktanam bhajatam pratipurvakam ladami buddhayogam tam yenamam upiyanti te. To those who are constantly devoted and worship me with love, I give them the understanding by which they can come to me. And Krishna also gives them the understanding how to guide others to come to him. See, both things. So I think we're going a bit over time what we had planned to go. And we thank you all very much. Save it for the Sunday feast lecture tonight. Save your question for the lecture tonight. So we thank you all very, very much for your participation in this movement. Prabhupada is very, very pleased that you're all here today to hear these wonderful teachings that he has given us. And so please continue in this way, always hearing Prabhupada's teachings, repeating Prabhupada's teachings, and following Srila Prabhupada's teachings. If you do so, your lives will be absolutely glorious. Srila Prabhupada ki jai, Kandaraj Srimad Bhagavatam ki jai.